We're going to get started because we're a little limited today. We're learning today Lili Nishmas Tzvi Ben Zev. Okay, so where are we holding? We're learning here the first part of the Ner Mitzvah. The first part of the Ner Mitzvah deals with the Arba Malchias, with the four kingdoms, the structure of Golos in Machsheves Yisrael, in Jewish thought, in Chazal, is the way it reflected in history, that there are four kingdoms. Post Kol Yisrael became a nation, post Matan Torah, there are four kingdoms that subordinated the Bnei Yisrael. First was the Babylonians, who destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash, then the Persians, who took over from them, Poras Umadai, then the Greeks, with the story of Hanukkah, and then the Romans, who destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash, and we see what we are still experiencing almost 2,000 years later as a continuation of the Golos of Edom, the Golos of Raimi, that continues with Tzareinu until this day. These four Golios, again, the vision of them was found not just in Chazal, but the vision of them was the content of the dreams that are discussed in Daniel. The vision of them, the dreams that are discussed in Daniel, and the both in the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, in dreams of Nebuchadnezzar, and in the dreams of Daniel himself. And what we've been talking about here is how that structure presents itself. Eric, one last chance here. Menachem's looking at me, telling you didn't get through yet.
My computer's having problems, but if he okay. just believes it, I'll accept it when it gets
okay.
ready.
Okay, he'll accept it when he gets booted up. Okay, so back to the ranch. So what have we done here? What have we learned here in the Netzach, in the Ner Mitzvah? So number one, we learned the idea of the Arba Golios, which is of the notion of the limitation that is found, the incompleteness of the world, that they're hinted at from the beginning, from Aretz HaSatayu Vavayu, before the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was introduced in the world. The Torah described four stages of Tayu Vavayu V'chayshach Al Pnei Yisrael V'ruach Elokim, which Chazal see as the limitation of that. The four is always representative of the dimensions that exist within the physical world, and those are the limitations on the appearance of what's supposed to be the heart and the essence of the material world, thank you very much, which is the presence of Hashem, which becomes apparent in Geula. What are the specific, excuse me for going so quickly, but again, I'm just reviewing what we covered the first couple of times. What are the specific dimensions of those four? So last week, we saw how the Maral very elegantly explained the structure of the four, and he explained it using three different standards, so to speak. First, he spoke about the four components that exist within a human being, because after all, in the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, who saw the Malchios as a human being, as a big human being, one big statue made up of different parts, so that implies this idea that it's four parts of one person, even in the conception of a person of Nebuchadnezzar. That was one structure which he used. A second structure which he used were the four kinds of metals which were making up that image of the human being that Nebuchadnezzar envisioned, where the gold head, the silver top torso, the copper bottom and legs, part of the torso and middle, and the legs, which were made out of iron, out of barzel. And then the third model was the four animals that Daniel envisioned. Daniel saw a lion, he saw a bear, he saw a leopard, and then he saw some monstrous creature that was representative of the fourth. So the Maral created a structure, a framework, to look at all of these Golios and using these elements. And briefly, what did he say? He said a human being has three basic energies, three basic sort of like forces within them. There's the force which ultimately motivates them as a life force, what we consider as residing in the lave, in the heart, that which drives us, the passions which move us. There's a force which comes from the core of the physicality of the person, which obviously is a big major potential driver to influence the heart, what you call not the koyach ha-nefesh, but the koyach ha-guf, the power of the body. you have the part which emanates not from the stomach and the midsection, but from the head, again in the formulation that we used otherwise, from the moach, right, which is decisions which are based on wisdom. That also can be that which influenced the heart. That's the koach haseichel. And then there's a vision of the person as a whole, not compartmentalized into the nefesh, into the guf, into the seichel, but the whole package of the person. And says the Maharal, that corresponds to the four elements of the four Goliaths. On the one hand, you have the most powerful one, in a great sense, is that which is driven by the heart, the passion which drives the person. And that was representative of Malchus Bavel, which was, in a sense, the most significant. They were the initiators of Golos. They're compared in the dream to the lion, the king of the beasts, to the gold, right? The gold top of the statue. Gold is significance. And then you have beneath that, you have Poras, the Persian Empire, which Chazal see as being like a bear. I mean, the vision which the Pasuk says is like a bear. And the bear is this very hungry creature that's always roaming around and impatient and always looking to swallow up and get and develop more and more, more and more. And that's the Persian Empire. And he said the reflection of that was Achashverosh constantly levying mas al ha'oretz, taxes. Achashverosh didn't even bother mouthing no new taxes. Right? He was constantly, one of the refrains of the Megillah, almost any excuse, he put a mas al ha'oretz, he put a tax on the land, because they're always hungry. They're always hungry. And therefore, that's the koach haguf. That's like the power of the body. Always hungry. Always trying to desire, trying to have, to gain something more. And then the third one, which you would think would be most important, but says Maral, let's be practical and speak about what's most powerful is the heart. The seichel should be most powerful, but it isn't always. The guf sometimes has a tendency to be more powerful, the bodily desires. And the seichel is the third. And the seichel, kesef, I didn't connect to the precious metals, silver is money. Money is always the focal point of desire and the desire to have more and more. Yesh le'mon ratzon masayim. So he represents the bear, the silver, the physical desire. The third step are the Greeks, who represent wisdom, the koach haseichel, the power of intellect. And the Maharal gave a lot of discussion about why that specifically is the nature of Yavan. Remember, this book is about Hanukkah, so he dwells a little bit on the Greeks and Greek wisdom and everything associated with that, and why the Greek threat to the Jewish people was therefore, unlike the Persians, who are grounded in physicality, and their threat to the Jewish people was to try to destroy us physically, l'hashmid l'arogu l'abeid, to destroy us physically as described in the story of Purim. The Greeks, the physical battle was incidental to the ideological battle, to their desire, l'hashkicham torasecha, to stop us from using our wisdom. They didn't want to accept that there was a wisdom higher than theirs, a wisdom that involved transcendent qualities that would come from the Ribono Shel Olam. And that's the nature of the Greeks. Now, why are the Greeks compared to the leopard? Why are the Greeks compared to the Nechoshes? So here the Maharal said his beautiful creative turn, which is that the leopard, we know, is associated with Azus. Azus is a certain brazenness and stridency and strength. Right? And copper, likewise, is associated with exactly the same thing. The image of the brazen person is described in the Pasuk as mitzchech nechusha, right? That your forehead is like copper. It's somehow a sign of strength. And we said it has to do with the strength of the metal, the strength of copper as it is. So, therefore, it's azus. And so what's that got to do with wisdom? The Torah says that the Torah was only given, the Gemara says, that the Torah was only given to the Jewish people because we are Azim, because we have this characteristic. And the way the Maharal explained it in his thought was because when you have something physical, it's like chaymer, it's material. You have a gob of clay. You have a gob of clay. That's chaymer. It's there to be formed. Right? Physicality is passive, is the couch potato, is just, you know, it's just sitting there. Wisdom is when you take that gob of clay, right, you use cleverness and wisdom to form it into a cup, to form it into a bowl, to put upon it a tsura, a structure, a form. That wisdom acts upon things instead of being acted upon. Wisdom forms, whereas physicality is formed. And so when we speak about Kol Yisrael and the strength and intensity of their wisdom, it's characteristic of their azus, of that strength, to be able to give something apart. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to give us the Torah, as the Gemara says, because otherwise, whoa, you know, maybe that sense of intellect and wisdom would have been so overpowering. So Hashem gave us the Torah, where the Torah will be the ultimate forger, but sometimes of reality. But sometimes we struggle with it, and that's where our Am Keshei Oref part of the Azus fits in, you know, because we have this strength inherent, so therefore sometimes we're resistant to even accepting from Hashem. But the Greeks, who were similarly this intellectually powerful people, intellectually focused people, they're compared to the leopard, which is Az, which is brazen, they're compared to the Nechayshas. And finally, you have the Romans, the last Malchus, Edom, which in Nebuchadnezzar's dream appears as the metal legs, the iron legs on the bottom. And excuse me for my oversight last week, or forgetfulness, or both, but the Maharal explains, because the concept, right, the fourth is, first of all, is like a combination of the three. When it comes to the qualities of the person, it's the whole human being, not the body, not the brain, not the life force, but the Adam Bichlal. And that's why we find in all the metaphors about the fourth Malchus is that it's a cumulative Malchus, that it brings everything together. Sidol Melech Goyim, right, was the king of the four kings that fought against Avram, that represented Rome. He was the king of the nations. It's the totality of the person. And the characteristic of them is what?
The UN.
Right. And the monster is the monster that, you know, you can't identify with this animal, that animal. It has all these, this conglomerate of properties of everything else. And what's the characteristic? What's the characteristic of Edom? The characteristic of Edom is destruction. Is the desire to be destructive, which is symbolized in the barzel, in the iron. The iron is described back from Parshas Bereishis as the tool of destruction. In the Mishkan, it says you cannot put barzel on the Mizbeach, because, you know, to cut it, because barzel is a tool of destruction, and the Mikdash is there to make things whole, to be mashlim, to bring peace between Klal Yisrael and Aviyam Shabashamayim. So that's more or less where we went. Remember, we've recalled before, and we recall again, that when Chazal contrast the destroyers of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Babylonians, with the destroyers of the second Beis HaMikdash, with the Romans, the Babylonians are compared to the lion, and the Romans are compared to the snake. And the Gemara says the difference between a lion and a snake is that when a lion destroys something, it proceeds to eat it, to devour it. It wants it, it needs it. It's not destructive for the sake of destruction. If a lion's not hungry, it's not going to destroy, right? It's a carnivore. It's an animal of prey in order to be able to have. And when the Babylonians destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, they were doing it because they were trying to conquer this area, and so that was part of their act of conquest. The Romans are like the snake. The snake destroys without eating, right? The carcass lies there. It just strikes out with its venomous poison and it kills, but it doesn't then walk away with the spoils of the battle. It walks away saying, see, I destroyed that. Just the destructive impulse, that's the Nachash. And that's what Edom, that's what the Romans are compared to. The Maharal suggests that this is historically seen in the fact that when the Romans destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, they were already controlling the Jewish people by and large. You read the stories in the Gemara, the Romans were already a dominant factor in the lives of the Jews. It was just then that when they had this story, you know, with bringing a korban in the Beis HaMikdash and so on, that then there was a personal offense, so the Roman said, we want to destroy it. He sees it as being like a separate stage, even while they were already under the Romans, so they had them, but they still had to destroy. They still had to destroy. One could, of course, see this easily reflected as we see that Edom and Rome and so on, Amalek continued in our own time. That's Chazal's tradition. So when what did the Nazis do in the last phases of the war? Did they divert their assets in order to be able to preserve as much as possible of their empire as they could, or what was left of the empire that they had built during the war? Or did they divert all of their resources to be able to destroy as many of the Jews as possible? Again, I don't know. You never know. Some people have better command of history, right, than I. But according to conventional understanding and from what has been seen, is they were hopelessly enraptured with trying to destroy as much as possible at that point in time, rather than to gain as much as possible. And that's how they used their resources. That's how they allocated their resources. That's the Nachash. That's the snake. And I would like to just follow through here today with what time we have with the way the Maharal pictures this idea, where he expands the picture of the destructiveness of the Fourth Empire. And it's a very chashuva, very significant insight. And I think it's helpful and has certain applications. The Maharal says, the Malchus Revius of Edom is, in the terms of the Maharal, and this is the kind of terminology he uses in many places, it's Davek El HaHeder. It's attached to Heder, which means to loss. It's so inherently weak that it's like lost from the get-go. That's part of its attraction to the destruction of others. But that's also together with self-destruction. You find as a common phenomenon that the most destructive people are people who are also most self-destructive. In a sense, in their world of destruction, they don't value anything, starting with themselves. If they don't value anything, then they, so to speak, have nothing to lose. Right, the vicious form of destruction which we have in our time, right, the suicide bombers, right, the concern that we have, Rahmana Litzlan, about Iran is they don't care for themselves too much, so therefore nothing's going to stop them from damaging anything and trying to destroy anything else. Our greatest strength was when you had the deterrence of self-preservation, right, the mutual destruction notion was something which sort of closed the deal that made for a cold war. But when you're davek el haheder, when all you're interested in is destruction, self-destruction or otherwise, that's the whole thing. And says the Maharal, it's inherently so. It's mamish a beautiful insight. Because how many kingdoms are there? Four. Which means that the fourth kingdom is the end of the game, is the last kingdom. And that means that when the fourth kingdom is gone, the opposition to the presence of Hashem in the world is absolutely gone. It's absolutely destroyed. It's Davek El HaHeder. Because to some degree, that fourth kingdom is doomed. And doomed in a way that the others are not. Because the others at least had successors. Right? The Babylonians morphed into the Persians. It went from there into there, and from the Persians to the Greeks, and from the Greeks to the Romans. People who understand and can describe history far better than I will show you. You could see it even in the stories, from Babel to Persia in Tanakh, right? It was a kingdom. They married one. It was a son-in-law. They were related one to the other, right? And similarly, according to the other transitions, so that kingdom faded. It was no longer the Babylonians, it was now the Persians, but it wasn't ultimate destruction. It's only the Romans that we haven't seen them destroyed yet. The Romans in the broader sense, Western, Christian, etc., we haven't seen them destroyed.
They had a good run.
Yes, the longest, but on the same time, that's the aspect to great measure of the idea of Davek Eloheder. And so he says the destructiveness comes together with the self-destructiveness, the self, the failure of self that comes together with the desire to somehow try to bring something else down. That's always, that's the motive of the nachash, the snake, right? Trying to bring down, trying to destroy. It's not, that's the way of bringing itself up, is to some degree from destruction. And the Maharal offers yet another beautiful aspect, I think, of this metaphor. He says that it sort of works like any physicality works in the world. That physicality tends to slowly but surely deteriorate and disappear. We call that the radical changes of the aging process of Zikna. And when it comes to the spirit, it's the other way around. We say a baby that's born, right, the language of Chazal is from the beginning it has a Yetzer Hara. Physical desire is alive and well in an infant. Wakes up in the middle of the night, right, hungry, crying, that's the only thing it can think about. And only as a person matures, when they hit Bar Mitzvah, then the Yetzer Tov, then the spirit starts to possess the person, be stronger. As they somehow have grown up, there's a little bit of the fading of the physicality, not visibly so, but in the sense that the spirit and the other drives can loom larger. Das, even wisdom, can loom larger. And as the person physically goes down, they're getting closer to what? To coming closer to Hashem Yisbarach. I've told you, we've learned many times before, the Maharal's concept of why we honor the elderly in the Torah. Why do we honor people who are older? Because we say the young people, where physical passions are raging, the mind and the soul necessarily has such stiff competition that it's secondary. But as the body weakens, what can become stronger in its place is wisdom. People, right, when they get older, they start to really value more the more important things in life. They recognize the more important things in life. That's the value of Zikna. And says the Maharal, that's the way we are to view this body called the Golios. They may start off with the greatest strength, but then slowly but surely move towards deterioration, as what's rising up is the presence of Hashem. What's rising up is the flip side of that. That's the way, that's to a great degree the way he sees it. And Maharal includes in this many other, you know, points, so to speak, what we call side points. Right? Chazal famously make another comparison, and when it says that the pasuk enumerates non-kosher animals. To have kosher animals, it has to have two signs. It has to have chewing of the cud and splitting of the hoofs. Right, so the Gemara, the pasuk lists there are certain animals which are non-kosher that, while they do chew their cud, but they don't have split hoofs. And one of them is the gomel, one of them is the arneves, one of them is the shafan, right? So the Chazal compare those to Bavel, Poras, and Yavan. And then there's the chazer, the pig, that it's the opposite. It has split hooves, but it doesn't chew its cud. And the Maharal discusses this idea, because the Medrash says on that two things. It says, first of all, that to some degree each of them, when it says that they chew their cud, it says that they actually give song to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it illustrates how each one of them, in Bavel, Nebuchadnezzar, with all the evil of Nebuchadnezzar, the Nebuchadnezzar also gave a song of praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He had a moment of revelation. When you read the book of Daniel, he spread the good word about HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout his kingdom when he had his moment of revelation. And says the Chazal, his praises rivaled the praises of David HaMelech. And when you look at Persia, they also, you have Kairosh who built the second Beis HaMikdash. Also positive things came from him. And the Greeks, as we've discussed before, right, as we talked about last week when the Maharal went on his aside about the Greeks, their connection to wisdom. And Alexander the Great bowed down to Shimon HaTzadik. And he said, I have visions of the God of Shimon HaTzadik and so on, going before me in the battle. They had an appreciation. They had that inner, as the Maharal says, Simon of Tyre. They had that inner sign of purity, which is the chewing of the cud. But Esav, never had this appreciation. It's a very interesting thing, because one might have said, what are you talking about? What happened to the Romans? When was the last time you heard of a Roman? Right? Besides a numeral. Right? You know, when was the last time you heard of a Roman? So how do we see it? We see that what's in Rome is the Vatican, is the seat of Christianity. And that is the Western world. Is there anything that drew more from Judaism than Christianity?
But externally, Islam.
Okay. Okay, Yishmael is an aside. They have to
marry each other. He's
in the way.
They marry each other in the end.
Yes. Seir v'chaisnei, right? Edom marries the daughter of Yishmael, but to dismiss them as not having anything, any connection to the praise of Hashem, is an interesting thing. You know, the Rambam takes a more positive view in the sense that he views it as, okay, Avraham Avinu's work is being done because the world believes through Christianity and Islam, right, in monotheism and concepts of Mashiach and so on and so forth, and it's marching towards the Mashiach. The Chazal didn't see it. They didn't see such an open expression, maybe because of Christianity's terrible hostility towards Judaism at the same time. In each of the other cases, we find a nurturing. The Nebuchadnezzar nurtured, the kingdom of Persia nurtured, the Alexander the Great nurtured, he blessed. You know, we don't see the rise of Christianity as blessing the Jewish people so much, even if we can see it as one of the great accomplishments of Judaism and one of the great accomplishments of Avraham Avinu. But it's the Chazir, where it's just on the outside, it's not on the inside. And the Chazir, Chazal say, is that they're going to be Machzir Atorah Liyashna. They're going to return the crown to where it belongs. In other words, the restoration of Malchus Yisrael is going to be delivered by Rome, because Rome is the last Torah. It's the last kingdom. It's the last possibility. And the other ones, it says, the Medrash Darshan says, the other words, it's Malagera, is Goreres Malchus Achrea. The Babylonians drew the Persians after them, and the Persians drew the Greeks, and the Greeks were Gera, they were drawing the Romans, but the Romans, they flipped it back, Machzir, they gave it back to the Jewish people. So there's this perception, this perspective that the Maharal brings to this notion of it, that it's destructive because it's the end, because we're talking about the last of the Malchios. And that's the Barzel. That's the iron that's there in order to symbolize this notion of destruction. And we'll just say one last note. There's more here, and Mi'ratz Hashem, next time we will try with a little less pressure to tidy up and finish his discussion of the Arba Malchios and maybe begin on the part of the essay of Chanukah. But he says that's why when you see in Nebuchadnezzar's dream where this idol gets smashed, the image of that human being made up of gold and silver and copper and metal, it says the destruction start at the metal. It says it came and it hit the stone which destroyed, which Mir Hashem is going to discuss, went and attacked the barzel, the metal, and then the iron, and then the copper, and then the silver, and then the gold, because he says, since this is the one which is destruction, the destruction starts from them. That's why the image is that the destruction starts at the metal. That which destroys is destroyed. And therefore it goes and it goes and it goes and it progresses as well to bring the destruction to the others. But the destruction starts with them. That's what he says. I think, you know, there's a lot we can always take from these things. But one thing which is so chashuv, so straightforward and so significant, is this idea of the matching of destructiveness to self-destruction. It's such a truism. It's so real. It's something which is so tangibly seen and felt in every realm of life. Somebody who values things, values themselves, somebody who throws things away, who destroys, doesn't appreciate themselves. The Torah teaches us that even when you're waging war against a place, that's where we learn the Isser of Bal Tashchis. You know, everybody says Bal Tashchis. You know, drink your thing. Don't throw away the rest. Don't throw away the paper. Where do we learn Bal Tashchis from? We learn it. It's a short end of a pasuk that says you can't destroy a fruit tree. Where, when you're laying siege to a city to wage war against it, so you say you have to destroy it. You have to conquer it, but don't do it in a way which is destructive. Do what you have to do. Don't just let it go, let it rip. Don't destroy anything more than you have to, because what are you you're fighting for your survival. If you become a destructive person, you're destroyed. If you don't salvage things, if your perspective isn't I have to do what I have to do. Of course sometimes there's such a thing, you have to win a battle, you have to win a war, but if all you are is destructive, then you're finished. Says the Torah, as you're waging war, salvage anything of value that you can have there. Don't let it just become a festival of destruction. Bal Tashchis. And this is a tremendous reality that's true in individuals. Forget nation. Forget the lives of nations. You see it in the lives of individuals all the time. All the time. Right? And it's something. You know, the best therapy sometimes for somebody who has no self-worth, no self-value, and therefore engages in self-destructive behaviors is to help them build somebody else up, to help them help somebody else, to help them help an elderly person or a needy person or a handicapped person or whatever it is, because then when they're investing in value, it comes back to that they see their own. That's the rot of Edom. That's the rot of the Nachash, of the snake. Destruction wedded to self-destruction. Okay. Yitz Hashem, we will continue next week. Now, literally, we've got to run. Okay.
You're on a run and we're on a cricket.